Hello, all. Welcome back. Today I'm going to cover a lot, so this may actually be a two or three part episode ordeal. But I was listening to a lecture, I think it was 2 days ago, I can't remember, by a lady named Dr. Diana Diamond, very smart lady. She's an author of a couple books. She's done a ton of research on NPD and it sounds like all the other cluster B personality disorders also. And she was giving a lecture for a master class for PhD students. If you look her up on YouTube, you can find it. And then she's also got a website too. But I was listening to her lectures and kind of just started to jot down some notes. And I have a close friend right now who is really struggling with a lot of like ambivalence and feeling stuck and not knowing what to do. And, as far as making a choice whether to leave an abusive situation or not. And when we talk on the phone and she's in all this distress, which I've been in this state many times, and it's so hard, but when she calls me, she tells me repeatedly, I'm so tired of not knowing what I want. She kind of describes a state where just like day to day, sometimes hour to hour, her mindset and attitude and choices change towards whether to leave her narcissistic partner or not. She says a lot, I don't know if he's not my person. I don't know if he is my person. All these things. So I think it's good that she is starting to go in a direction of trying to understand her own psychological state rather than the other person's. So I want to talk about that a little bit today. I think that's like a huge marker of recovery and growth. And I pointed that out to her the other day. I was like, I hear you kind of like being more inquisitive and more in tune with like you realizing that there's something foundationally going on within your psyche right now that's, got you shaken up or gotten you into a state where you're thinking differently than you used to, and all this, distress is going on rather than what's wrong with him and trying to fix him. So this is a huge sign of growth in this type of situation to start thinking about yourself and your own well-being versus your partner's and letting the codependency go. She's also done really well at starting to have some insight. She told me point blank the other day, I don't know why I can't get out of my comfort zone. And I'm afraid, I'm afraid of the unknown. And I think that's a huge hallmark sign also of healing. It's really hard to admit that to yourself, when you're able to kind of get to that place. So something I find myself doing a lot with her and other people that I have supported in this situation is try to really break down, like the pathology of the behavior of the other person so that they don't take it personally and they don't take responsibility for it. And I think that by doing that, that's how we make the shift from, oh, my partner this, oh, my partner that, oh, poor him, he's got so much going on in his head, oh, he suffers too, that's why I just stay with him, he's a good person, he's just really depressed, or really this, he had a fucked up childhood, da 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 da. Well, okay, fine. Didn't we all? Not to minimize anybody's experience, but I'm just saying that that's not a valid reason to abuse another person, right? So I think that it's helpful to give that education on what exactly is going on with the pathology of that other person to remove the responsibility for it. And then you can focus on yourself and you can go, okay, that's their stuff. That's not me. Now I need to figure out what's going on with me as to why I'm staying, in the trauma bonding and all of this. And I think when we get to this place in a relationship with a narcissistic partner, the golden question of the hour that our mind constantly and continuously spins over is it him or is it me? And that is the core of that indecision to leave. Well, what if it's me? What if I leave and it's really me, it wasn't them, and I regret it. And I think once, I personally gained confirmation that the relationship was failing and I was suffering because my partner was narcissistic and severely mentally ill in a way that was so well hidden but so volatile, it set me free from the responsibility of my own pain. Because he had me believing in the thick of it that my suffering was due to my own fuck ups. I mean, everything was my fault. My perception that I was in the pain I was in was because of my bad behavior, the way that I treated him. I treated him so poorly, and this is why he cheats and does all these things because he can't deal with me, but he loves me, so he stays with me. So learning about narcissism gave me the psychological permission to confirm, within myself that it's him, it's not me, and leave. So, with that being said, I only came to this realization, before the first time I left. It definitely was several years of going back and forth and having to continuously learn and relearn when I forgot and was romanticizing what is going on with him, why he behaves towards me the way that he does, why he says the things to me that he says, said is what I should say now, to keep myself centered, right? When there was conflict or when we would argue or when he was trying to brainwash me again, I had to work really hard at staying in reality and staying centered in those arguments and in those fights, because they really try to get you checked into that alternate reality that they create where you're just this horrible person treating them horribly. And you're the abuser. That's a very common symptom of being an abuse survivor, is when you're being abused, you think you're the abuser. You have to learn, and then you have to stay centered and stay on track, with the core belief that there is nothing wrong with you and you are lovable. Because folks with NPD, once they can get that taken away from you, they have control. So, what I would like to do in this episode is go through some of that pathology, some of the characteristics and the rationale behind them. And I think explaining the rationale behind them kind of helps us also de-escalate the anger within ourselves, because, the way that these folks behave, there's a reason for it. So we'll go into that. And this lecture by Diana Diamond kind of helped me, really think about that more deeply. And I think that's important. Not so we can go, I do not believe these maladaptive behaviors, that our narcissistic partners use are bad or evil or whatever. They're definitely a sad thing to watch once you know what they are. And really, what they are is our partner's way of getting their needs met, because they do not know how to do that in a functional, loving way. Now, if you're more on the antisocial side, some would describe that as evil, but I mean, really, all that is like just. No, like not a lot of activity in the brain as far as like having empathy for other people and all these things. It's they literally have like MRIs of psychopaths' brains where like the activity in those sections of the brain are just like almost non-existent. Like they just don't feel the same way that we feel. They don't have the same psychological makeup, which is scary, but also not their fault. So tonight we're going to go into these things. We're going to cover manipulative situations that come up often in these relationships. We're going to go into gaslighting a little bit further into depth, and I'm going to give some examples. We're going to cover blame shifting and the inability to take responsibility for bad behavior and hurting others, and where that comes from, what the need, trying to be met is behind that. And most importantly, I'd like to touch on the grandiose perception of self that these individuals tend to have and why that develops. That is the majority of what Dr. Diamond's lecture was on, kind of the explanation as to how the development of that grandiose, unrealistic version that they have of themselves and of what their life is supposed to be like comes from, why they do that, why they stay in that place, why they can't just snap out of it and be in reality with us. And the core of that is being raised by a parent who uses them as an extension of themselves. It's actually quite sad. So the parent, raises the child in a way where the child's main purpose is to make them look good. The child doesn't have an identity of its own or any needs of its own. As long as the child is meeting the parent's needs as far as, gaining recognition or praise through sports or, good grades or whatever the hell it is, that's the only purpose of that child's existence. And so this kind of grandiose perception of being the best and being better than everybody else kind of comes from that. So I think it's a really important thing to understand. It's definitely, the mind's way of protecting them from harm. Again, each person has their own trauma and their own probable abuse history, as to why they develop these defense mechanisms within their mind and how they got to the place that they are in, in their adult life, where they're treating their adult partners this way with narcissistic personality traits. So I would like to touch on the hallmark symptom that folks with NPD do often report, because they don't really report depression. And they don't really report anxiety as much, or any type of real, like, vulnerable symptomology that they're experiencing. And sometimes they just can't verbalize it. But it's really common for them to report feeling empty. I've heard that so much in my kind of like educational journey of learning this disorder and what they go through. And I definitely know my ex-partner used to say that a lot. He would never say I'm depressed. He would never say, he said he was anxious a few times, but he really wouldn't verbalize, or even, I don't even know if he was even really aware of, like what he was going through. But he was, when he was down and out, he was able to verbal, he would say, I feel so empty. I feel so empty. I don't know what's wrong with me. I feel like something's missing. I feel like I'm trying to fill a void, but I don't really know what it is I'm even trying to fill. So I kind of want to go into, like where that emptiness may come from. That was something else she talked a little bit about in that lecture. So with all this being said, if you are still struggling very much, so with deciding if your partner is a narcissist or whether you should leave them or if you can save them in some way. I do not want you to take this episode in and use the information to become your partner's therapist, right? Your partner needs a real therapist, and not only any real therapist, because most therapists would not be effective in treating him. Most therapists would become victim of his behaviors also, and would end up discharging him as a client due to the way that he treats them and manipulates them, or discharge him because he attempts to seduce her and makes her uncomfortable. Or, best of all, he's successful in seducing her and they end up dating. I've heard it. It's not that far-fetched. Dr. Diamond actually talks a lot about, these are the hardest clients to treat. You really have to have thick skin, because they will devalue the therapist a lot. So those are the similar scenarios of when folks with NPD go into therapy with a therapist who is not specialized in treating personality disorders, especially narcissistic personality disorder. That's how that goes. And I will tell you, there are not many therapists on the face of this earth that do specialize in it at this point. So my point to all this is, we do not have the ability to make narcissistic behaviors disappear or get them to go away or change. And that's a really hurtful and hard thing to accept because it means we cannot stay with our person unless we want to continue being abused. So that in itself is really hard. So what I would like you to do with this material is take it in and understand why this person behaves the way that they do towards you and treats you the way that they do, as to remove the blame from yourself and set yourself free of taking responsibility for the relationship dynamic and the way you were being treated and the way that you feel. That is a huge weight lifted off your shoulders. And I think understanding the way that they operate is a must in being able to do that. I find myself often seriously considering going into the field of developing treatment and research on NPD, because I have developed so much empathy and understanding for people that do go through this. I also have come to a place in my life where I understand the dynamic well enough to never take responsibility for a narcissist behavior toward me again, or to let them make me believe that I am responsible for their maladaptive, cruel behavior. This motivation to treat, also comes from an overall desire to improve the world because it's becoming a real problem. And the way that people are being treated is not acceptable to me. So, narcissism has become very common. That's a whole other thing in and of itself, which Dr. Diana Diamond has a lot of research on too. So I see it ruining a lot of things, and I feel that we, as a society, need to get a handle on it before it really does some hard damage, like more than it's already done. It seems as though toxic, abusive relationships have become the norm in our society. That's kind of the harsh wake-up call I got when I divorced at 28 years old and went into the world again to date. Either that or relationships have always been this way and we've just never really noticed it or been able to call it for what it is. Maybe a little bit of both. But if I'm going to do that, I've learned I need to return to school for several years and do it the correct way. We don't owe them that. And as far as I'm talking about being your partner's therapist, you don't owe that to them. That's not your responsibility. You need to set yourself free from that. And I know it's really hard. But also, you can't help somebody that doesn't want to be helped. And be real careful not to get manipulated into them saying that they want help when they do not. So we really need to pay attention to actions, not words. My advice to you is, if your partner has told you more than 2 times that they want help and they'll go to therapy in order to stay with you and they haven't done it yet, they're not going to fucking do it. So excuse yourself from that scenario if that's what they're promising you. So we don't owe them that. And if you're going to do that for another human being, you need to charge for it, right? Hope you have good insurance, babe. Okay, so let's get into some of this, and I'm gonna freeball this. I don't have notes. I'm laid up with a knee injury, so I haven't taken the time to like formalize any notes. So I'll try to make this as like cohesive as possible. But I think probably the most important thing to start with in understanding all of this is that grandiose self that they develop, why they do that, and how it presents. So when I met my partner, I noticed he was very vocal and proud, and his identity and like, his personality and his purpose and his worth was really hard set into his occupation in law enforcement and in the military. And that's great. Right? I mean, I think everybody that does those two things should be really proud of that and mad respect. That's like some hard stuff. I would probably neither do either of them. But as I dated him and as time went on, and it actually didn't take very long for me to really notice it. I noticed some things kind of around those two things he really associated with his identity. He was extremely particular. It's very type A, which is also common with the with those occupations. And controlling, and just kind of had this like, I could tell the way he looked at himself was a little bigger than what was actually going on. And I think the first time I ever kind of really caught that and had a solid thing, like I was like, oh yeah, that is what's going on. And kind of saw that mask slip was, let me back up a little bit into the story a little bit, but further. So he comes from a family with money. Daddy is a correctional officer who's promoted fairly high up. And I don't know if his family has money from elsewhere. I kind of got the feeling that they did, but anyways, they're well off. His parents are very well off. And as I dated him, I figured out that they actually helped him out quite a bit financially. And he hid that. He was very ashamed of that. Now I understand in a public forum, if your parents are paying half your mortgage, the truck is in your dad's name and you're in your 30s, okay, fine. You don't want to tell your friends. Okay. I get that, but the level of like hiding it and the level of like being ashamed when I would find things out was a little bit more so than the average Joe I noticed. Like he would almost become angry when he was when I would find things out or things would slip where I would figure out he was actually lying to me. Example, his family has a boat. It's a rather nice boat. And when I first started dating him, he told me it was his boat and that he kept it at his parents' house. Well, later, to find out, and I don't remember exactly how it came out, but the boat is actually his parents' boat. And they were talking about getting rid of it a few years back. And he was like, no, I don't want you to get rid of the boat. I really like having the boat. So I said, okay, well, if you want to help with some of the finances of the boat, then we'll keep the boat. So I don't know if they're going halvesies. Whatever, I don't even think it's that. I think he just pays a portion of the fee to like have the boat stored, and I don't know if they had it paid off or not. Anyways, so that's the story there. But I remember when that happened, when his mom said something and she brought up getting rid of the boat again. That's how I found out. I was like, oh, like your parents are talking about getting rid of the boat. Like I thought that was your boat. And he was so embarrassed. And he was like getting really snappy with his mom, and he was irritated with her for outing him. So that was kind of a good example of that. Another example I could remember is, okay, so like his parents do help him out a lot, so he had like nice things. He displayed a lifestyle that looked like he made pretty damn good money. And not that I'm like into that, you know, but I just noticed he just, that's, I don't know, that was like a thing for him. He was like really proud of his stuff, and he was very materialistic. You know, at first I was like, okay, whatever, you know, he works hard, he has nice things, that's good. You know, I could see that, I could appreciate that. Especially for men, because I feel like men tend to be that way. But we were sitting at a bar one night with his coworker who he went to the academy with, so they were in the same exact, you know, place as far as how long they had been working at the facility that they worked at and such. And he said their pay rate out loud, which was 20 something dollars an hour. And which I don't care. I don't care. If it's not a requirement for me for you to make, you know, buku bucks or whatever. But again, I could tell by the look on his face, he was like mortified that his friend had just disclosed that they make, I think it was $28 an hour. He was just like, you know, you could see it all over his face. And I don't, he didn't get pissy with his friend. He's less comfortable with his friend, right? Like he has like a fake relationship to keep up with his friend, where with his mom, it's like it's his mom and he really treats his mom however the fuck he wants, which is not very well. You know, so he didn't get pissy or anything, but I could definitely tell he was super embarrassed. And he was embarrassed also because he wanted me to think that he made more money than me. Now, what does that come into play down the line? Well, he wanted me to think that because that's another element of control. You know, I would say that in the relationship, that was one of the, I guess, pillars, I guess you would call it, of the relationship, that he wanted to make sure that, you know, I was aware that he made very good money. Even as me being an RN, he would always make more money than me. Whenever I would talk about going to medical school, he wasn't real supportive around that. He was kind of like, eh. Yeah, you know, or even being like a nurse practitioner, anything that would put me at a higher status than him, he was not, he wouldn't even entertain the conversation. He literally would even like talk over me or change the subject sometimes, especially if we were with his friends. Sometimes, if his friends would start to praise me and kind of go, oh, okay, yeah, stay with her. You know, you guys will have like a great lifestyle. We make so much money together. You know, if it started to go up that tree, bark up that tree, he would kind of hop on board and act like he, you know, supported me in these things. But it's definitely something that was a topic of just not conversation. Like we didn't really talk about it. And I don't really know how to describe it that much. It came up sometimes when we would fight. But you know, actually mostly how it presented this whole thing of me making more money than him was he would just take digs at me, you know, call me Miss Moneybags, you know, especially after I graduated and everything and really got going on, you know, making good money as an RN. Just, oh, okay, Miss Moneybags. Oh, okay, since you can afford that now, you know, oh, you know, well, yeah, but I still have X amount in the bank. Good luck getting there. You know, things like just dumb shit like that. So, let me think what else on the grandiose thing. Oh, here's another thing. The medical thing. That was always a pissing contest that he was fully participating in, which I didn't. I'm like, whatever. You know, and when I first started dating him, I wasn't even in the nursing program yet. I was in prereqs. So I didn't really have medical background or experience. I had taken you know, microbiology, anatomy, and in my last semester before nursing school when we met, I was in physiology. So that was kind of the extent of my medical background. It wasn't very in depth. Now he had been an army medic for several years. But I realized over the progression of our relationship where I went to nursing school, became an RN, and then, you know, worked for a couple years and got, you know, my sea legs and everything. I reflect back to these early beginning conversations where he would be going on and on about, you know, these medical scenarios that he was, you know, the hero in, or he stitched someone's leg up, or, you know, did this or did that. I'm just, and like reflecting back on it now, and I'm just like, holy shit, he was such a liar because He didn't know how to do those things. And then as I went through school, progressively, he would be talking out his ass in front of people, trying to act like he knew things that he didn't. And I would call him out sometimes, especially in the later part of our relationship, where it was kind of out in the open that I'm okay, well, you're an abusive narcissist and whatever. He didn't do it very often at that point because he knew I would call him out, because he knew when I knew when he was lying. So he wouldn't do it as much in front of me, but it would still slip at times because he's a bragger and a liar. And I would just go, oh, really? Oh. And he would get really embarrassed. So, okay, so let's talk about kind of the purpose behind this grandiose thing that they have going on. I don't really know. I never really got a real in-depth version of really what went on in his childhood. We had some conversations about his mother, and I think that that is a larger part of his trauma and development of this disorder going on. I do think his dad has some things going on for sure. I think there was definitely infidelity within the marriage of his parents. His mom seemed pretty cold, and it was funny because she totally had, like this June Cleaver, perfect mom, perfect wife. She would cook for everybody. Like, we'd come home with like plates and plates of leftovers. Like, that's how she showed her love. But like, oh my God, the first time I went to hug her, it was like freaking, I don't even know, like ghost of Christmas past. And I just kept hugging her. Like, over the years, I just kept doing it. I'm like, whatever, I'm just gonna hug her. She needs a hug because she seemed like so angry all the time. But so I don't really know what the story is. She's cold, but then on the other hand, I don't know her on that level, and I've also observed my ex being quite rude to her and mean to her and talking down to her. So I don't know. I mean, maybe they have the relationship that they do because of him. Maybe he's always been that way. I don't know. I do know she ran a daycare, and sometimes I think about, well, maybe he's, such an attention whore because his mom was busy raising 20 other children all day long, Monday through Friday at this daycare. I don't know. I don't really care too much anymore. I don't like stay up at night over it like I used to. But Dr. Diamond talks about just this idea around, if you have a caretaker that treats you as an extension of themselves, and that's really the only purpose. And, there's this whole thing around just never being good enough. And so I think that's where the grandiose comes from. It's like that trauma around not being accepted by your caretaker, not being lovable, not being, what they expect you to be. And so in order to cope with that, they develop this alternate reality and this alternate version of themselves where they are everything that the parent needs and wants them to be. They won't ever be rejected or unloved again because now they're perfect. You can't say shit about them because they got all the damn boxes checked, right? And if you are with somebody like this and you point out something wrong, or there is any sliver of criticism, even healthy, right? Like, when you're in a relationship, sometimes the other person's gonna have negative feedback for you. If you hurt their feelings, if you do something that they don't agree with, et cetera, et cetera, which started pretty fairly early on in our relationship. They can't handle that. They can't deal with that. Under this super confident, untouchable facade is a very, very fragile person with like zero self-esteem. And I've had a lot of people go, well, they come off so confident and they come off like they have unmeasurable self-esteem, like just all the time. Well, that's because they need supply, right? So that's why we see people with narcissistic traits in these back to back, serial dating, lots of infidelity, dating multiple people at the same time situations, because they're just constantly going through that cycle of needing that supply, needing the compliments, needing the praise, needing to feel like they have somebody that worships them and only sees them as this ideal version of themselves. And if they don't have that, they crumble. They can't handle it. So when you're in a long-term relationship with somebody like this, and you do have these super normal, healthy things arise within the relationship where there needs to be conflict, or you need to have a talk with them because you don't like the way they're treating you, or you don't like something that they said, or there's some kind of real issue, that's where this whole thing where they're like, oh, okay, well, you don't think of me anymore as this ideal version of myself that I have to, keep alive. I can't be not perfect. I can't have flaws. So I can't be in this ideal dynamic with you anymore. I need to go find somebody new who doesn't know these things about me that I can keep up this facade with and get my supply as being the perfect man. So I hope that that makes a little bit more sense for you, if that's something you were struggling with. And I guess that's maybe a good place to lead into some blame shifting. So, when you fight with somebody like this who has this grandiose ideal version of themselves that they have to keep alive in order to just like cope with that deep down insecurity and pain, that's the cover up for it. It's really hard, because they can't. Even things that are understandable, they can't take responsibility for it. They just can't do it. So your feelings are wrong. If you bring up something that you didn't like or that was, their wrongdoing, that they can't be wrong. And this is why. So I'm going to turn off the recorder now, and I'm going to kind of put some thought into some blame shifting situations. Then I'll come back on and go over more of that with you all.